How will the world meet growing energy demand while reducing emissions? What technology, human capital, policy, and education is needed to making the energy transition a reality? What are the myths and hard truths about all forms of energy, our environment, and our economy? The Voices of Energy sets out to explore these questions with the people at the heart of making these changes a reality. We'll go from conversation to application by focusing on actionable strategies that will drive the world and our industry into a new era. I'm Katie Maynard, founder and CEO of Ally Energy, and this is the Voices of Energy.
We're so excited to have you here, Carolyn Comer. Thank you so much for joining us on the Voices of Energy podcast. She's the chairman of the board of Shell Trading Risk Management, president of Shell Energy America, a mom of three amazing kids, a rock star. Welcome, Carolyn.
Oh, Katie, thank you so much for having me. And thank you for that warm introduction.
Carolyn, we're going to get into your story, particularly because I must say, I think it was in your day-to-day hat that I was looking on LinkedIn and I saw this beautiful Christmas tree last year. And you guys had this wonderful event over in the community. And I said, I need to reach out to Carolyn because we worked together at the same time during Shell, but we didn't get the chance to actually work together in a Shell capacity.
No, that's so true, Katie. And actually, it's always been, it's great to reminisce with you because it's like, we can drop so many names and we go, oh yeah, you know, I know Peggy, I know Bill. So it's always fun to kind of shoot the memories with you from back in the early 2000s.
Absolutely. Well, before we get started, we always like to kind of start with an icebreaker. So we ask kind of a crazy question to get our audience warmed up to you as a person. So my first question for you is, in an alternate world, what would your profession be? So if you were not the president, if you were not the chairman, if you were not doing the things you're doing today, what would we see Carolyn do?
Okay, great question, actually. So, you know, I think there's probably two things. Kind of the more normal one, I think, would probably be teaching. I love learning. I love developing people. I love seeing a light bulb go off in someone's head when they get it. And so I find teaching is really personally rewarding. So that's kind of, if you like, the more normal. The less normal, I would be a potter. And in actual fact, thinking about it, the ideal, the perfect would be a pottery teacher.
Wow.
I had the joy of taking a 2-year career break when I worked for Shell. And I went and studied ceramics for 2 years because I love making. I actually like making things. I'm a big believer in production. And so, yeah, I had the joy of 2 years. I went and got my higher national certificate in art with a focus on ceramics. And so, yeah, if I could combine teaching and pottery, that would be nirvana, I think.
That's amazing. You know, listening, you talk about making things, you know, obviously Shell is big on making the energy future, and making the energy future is really important to us here at Ally Energy, because, you know, when I look at this, the industry does what? We build things. We power the world. So it makes absolute sense to me that you would take 2 years off, study pottery, and become a love of pottery itself. So pottery teacher, great. I think now I know when I get that invitation to your retirement party, I will make sure that we talk about how we're going to become pottery teachers when you're done. But thank you so much for giving your perspective on that. I think it's so important that people get to know kind of the personal side of you. So let's get into the professional side. Tell me a little bit about yourself, your background. You know, how did you get to Shell?
Sure thing. Well, let me start with me. So as you can probably tell from the accent, I'm not originally from Texas. I'm actually originally from Ireland, but I've been based here in Houston in Texas pretty much all the time since 2015. I actually joined the energy industry in 1998 by accident, not by design. And I'd previously been working, well, I started out my working life in a non-governmental organization, so an NGO, and then did about 6 years in the chemicals industry and joined Shell in 98. So that's about 25 years in energy. And about halfway through, I actually found my way into the trading organization. That was in 2011. And I have to say, that's where I feel I found my spiritual home. I really, really love the energy trading environment. It's something that just, makes me spring out of bed in the morning. There's no 2 days that are the same. I really discovered my spiritual home in trading. I'm married. I've got 3 amazing, like fantastic children. And actually myself, I'm the 5th of 6 kids. So I grew up in an incredibly busy household.
Well, that explains why you would want to work in the trading organization. I started my career actually in energy many years ago before I went to Shell. I was at the infamous Enron and then went down the street to Spectra Energy. And you're absolutely right. You know, when you, there's nothing like the excitement and the entrepreneurial spirit of a trading organization. And so it makes complete sense to me that it sounds like you've been busy early in your life, busy in the making of your family and your home life, and you like staying busy in your work life.
Totally, totally. And you're absolutely right about trading. I mean, the one thing, well, there's 2 things really for me. One is it's an environment where you have to continually be the master of reinvention. You know, you have to continue to innovate. And so that's a lot of fun because it's exciting. But the other thing it does is it gives you instant feedback. You know, your P&L in a trading environment doesn't lie. And so you know instantaneously how your decision is going to pan out, how your decision is going to perform. And I find that really rewarding. I'll be honest, I'm kind of an instant gratification person, I think. So that actually really suits me.
I'm so glad to hear that. You know, I think in maybe my alternate life, if I were ever to go back to corporate, I might come and work for you in trading because, you know, now that I think back, Shell has such a great environment. You know, it's a warm and inclusive place. Obviously, diversity, equity, and inclusion is the ethos of the company. But to be able to take that and work in an entrepreneurial environment and make change happen, particularly right now as we're going through the energy transition, is amazing. So tell me something, you know, you've been in this organization for a while. What is your take on culture and you know, diversity, equity, inclusion in Shell?
Yeah. You know, I've been extraordinarily lucky in the sense that I think someone who's probably a lot smarter than me and has a much greater vision than me, maybe, I don't know, 10 plus years ago, really, we embarked on this diversity, equity, and inclusion journey, not as a project, but to try and really create something which was kind of how we do things around here. And so, you know, I have the joy of leading a very, very large trading book, a beachhead to the energy transition. You know, we trade gas and power. We're the most established and the largest power business that Shell has. But actually, I sit amongst some incredible female colleagues. You know, we have Stacey Pitts. She heads up our crude trading organization globally, probably one of the biggest trading commodity trading jobs in the world. I've got Alice Acuna, who sits out in Singapore. She heads up our global LNG trading. And then we got a whole bunch of females on our leadership team, from our legal counsel to our head of risk, our head of compliance. I rode the wave, if you like, of a real culture shift in Shell that said, we want to be a diverse, equitable, and inclusive environment. And so there was some real deliberate, conscious efforts put into helping me get to where I am today. And so I feel incredibly lucky in that sense. I'm a huge believer in diversity, equity, and inclusion. So I talk about my love of instant gratification. I also have a very overdeveloped sense of fairness. Anybody who knows me will tell you I hold fairness and equity as a really, really strong personal value. And you know, my belief is it's just right that we create a level playing field for everybody to show up and be the best version of themselves that they can be. But to enable that, we've got to encourage diversity. We've got to deliberately go and seek diversity and bring diversity in. But once it gets here, then diverse people won't stay unless you really have an inclusive culture, unless you really welcome diversity of thought, diversity of experience, a diversity of perspective. And so to my mind, DE&I are 3 legs of one stool. You can't have one without the other. I had a boss once, I really admired him. And he had a habit of kind of saying to the team, I don't want you to tell me why I'm right. I need you to tell me why I could be wrong. And it was a really interesting way to position a conversation, because what he did was he created this kind of psychologically safe space for people to challenge him, you know, to have the contrarian view. And actually it worked, because we would get far more robust conversation and deliberation, which meant ultimately we got far better decisions and outcomes. And so, you know, whether you have this overdeveloped sense of fairness, as I do, or whether you just buy the idea and the business case that says more diverse companies get better outcomes more consistently, then I think it's just imperative that we really deliver on the promise of DE&I. We just have to. It's the right thing to do, but it makes good business sense.
Absolutely. You know, I'm just fascinated listening to you, and I know our listeners are dialed in. You know, you're such a strong and determined and focused woman in leadership. And I want to kind of poke the box a bit and ask you a little bit about the times when you've had doubts, or maybe how you handle, because look, I, by the way, just so you know, like, in fairness, so everyone out there can hear it, I know I have this glamorous social media life. I know everybody sees the words or letter CEO next to my name, and they think I'm a gazillionaire, right?
Yep.
But at the end of the day, we all come from a place of uncertainty. We all have fear. We all have doubt. And women especially, we doubt ourselves. So tell me about the times you've had doubt, and tell our listeners about how you overcame those doubts and how you've handled uncertainty. And yeah, please educate me, because I'm still in this 8-year journey, right, with Ally Energy. And there are times when I am super not, I'm not clear, right? I'm not clear.
Yeah.
But I need that energy, you know, to move me forward. So how does Carolyn handle doubt and uncertainty?
You know, it's a great question. And like you, people kind of look and go, wow, she seems so strong and kind of put together. There's very few of us that are that strong and that put together. And I am no exception. So have I had my doubts? God, yes. You know, I've had the doubts about, I shouldn't put myself forward for the job because I'm not qualified. I've had my doubts about when I've landed the job, whether I can actually do the job. I've had doubts around whether, you know, is this for me? I think we all go through periods of doubt, particularly where you make changes, you know, where you're challenging yourself and you're leaning into the big stretch assignments, you know. But I think the one I remember most, and actually I do share with other people, we were living in London. Myself and my husband were both doing busy jobs. I had my first baby, Laura. She was about 18 months, and the second one was on the way. And I was commuting in and out to central London. And it was exhausting. It was challenging. It was not a lot of fun, actually, if I'm honest. It was just a juggle fest. And I thought, you know what? I don't think women can have it all. I don't think you can be a good mom and have a great career. And so it was clear to me which one had to give. So I was marching down the corridor in Shell Center in London. You probably remember Shell Center. I had my letter of resignation clutched in my paw, and I was on my way to see my boss to say, I'm out, I'm done. And I happened to bump in, it was just pure coincidence, I bumped into Kim, who was the HR woman that had originally hired me into Shell. And she went, hey, Carolyn, how's it going? And I went, you want to know how it's going? You know, I'm like on the edge, you know. So she said, why don't we go get ourselves a cup of coffee? Okay. You know, so multiple cups of coffee and a very long chat later, I was writing my request. I was filling in the forms to take a 2-year career break, mm-hmm. which I did. And actually, that's, of course, when I said, you know, I can't just sit at home, I'll go and be a potter, which was a bit weird. But anyway, but I think the point was that I had this eureka moment that when you stew on those doubts on your own, there's a real risk you're going to end up making irrevocable decisions based on incorrect assumptions that you really can't change. And so going and talking to people is probably the single biggest thing I've been able to do to manage my way through these periods of doubt and uncertainty and questioning. You know, going and finding those people who you can really, really trust as good advisors, who can see you for who you are and what you can be, who can help you problem solve, because we all have problems, you know, but they can help you problem solve. That was my eureka moment. Don't keep it to yourself. Don't sit in it. Don't spin. Don't assume. No one's going to guess what's in your head. So the only way that you can get help is by asking for help and seeking help and sharing. That for me was, you know, I have eureka moments throughout my life and throughout my career. That was one of the biggest ones ever. And the only thing I reflect on today is I shouldn't have relied on luck, that I would just happen to bump into Kim in the corridor. And so that's what I always encourage people: before you press the nuclear button, have a conversation with somebody who can give you sound advice, because you never know, you might not have to go nuclear at all.
You know, again, I'm totally dialed into this conversation. I don't know our folks are listening to, but I have to be super straight and honest and open, which is what we love about Voices of Energy in this podcast. And that is, I really wish you had been that person to stop me in the hall. Oh. Because I left Shell. A lot of people ask me why I left Shell. I was having a difficult time, just as many people do, right, in their careers. And as a woman, I felt like I had to take that on. And I actually had amazing women in the company, you know, and men that were championing me.
Yeah.
But if you don't ask, you don't get. And I think it's so important that people hear this, because culture is, you know, people don't leave great companies, they leave terrible bosses, yeah, right? And this is men too, right? I mean, yeah, you know, this is not just a woman thing, okay? This is an everybody thing. And so I think sometimes as humans, because we're uncertain or because we're afraid, right, to put it out there, we don't. And I remember it was, gosh, I had just had my daughter. I was stressed to the gilt. I didn't want to travel. I didn't want to. And you know what I did? I just said, nuclear, I'm going to fix this. I'll go somewhere else. Yeah. Maybe it's my time, right? And so just listening to you talk about this, I get kind of chills, because I think to myself, well, had you been in the hall, I would have maybe met you. But maybe this is why we're supposed to have this conversation, you know? I mean, I went on and obviously my career went in a different path, but to hear you say those words that it's important to lean in and ask is so important. I think people need to hear that, because you could be literally sitting on opportunity and not be aware of that,
yeah,
because of that fear and that doubt and that uncertainty. So thank you for my chill moment, right? My chill moment. I'm chilling here, man. I'm chilling. I'm like,
well, it's amazing, Katie. You know, I also think, you know, in our position, we need to lean in too, by the way, because I would never assume that, you know, my career or your career is a blueprint. But there aren't that many situations that as a young woman starting out, you're going to face that are totally unique, that have never been faced by somebody in the past. And so leaning in and being able to share those stories, like the number of times I've had people come to me and go, I had no idea you had three children and you have this big career. I'm really encouraged that there are pathways that I can follow. Well, that's fantastic. That's one more young, talented female who's decided to stay in the energy industry. And for me, that's huge. It's huge.
Awesome. Wow. Okay. I think this could be like a series where it's the Katie and Carolyn series. We talk about our experiences, because it's, I think a lot of the people that listen in and tune in, you know, want this great, you know, this great advice. And particularly as I look to the next generation, you know, so the upcoming, you know, generation and the next, you know, energy workforce of the future and what that looks like, you know, yeah, when you think about, because you and I, you know, we're 20 plus years, right? But when we think about the energy workforce of the future, yeah, what comes to mind? What are your thoughts about how we need to impart this kind of, right, conversation, these kinds of learnings to that next generation worker?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a great question. You know, it was interesting. I was reflecting last night before this conversation. I thought, you know, when I started out working, I started in Ireland and we had record unemployment at the time. Like we were up in the mid-teens. And so just having a job was all you really aspired to. You know what I mean? Job security and a paycheck, that was kind of it. You know, I roll forward to today's generation, and I don't think just job security and a paycheck is good enough for them. I think I see the youngsters, and it's reflected in my kids, by the way, but I see them looking for more. They're looking for purpose. They're looking for meaning. They're looking for how what they do has an impact. I think they're much more socially conscious. And I think that's probably helped by the presence of social media. And so, you know, I think the proposition to the younger generation coming into our industry has to be stronger than simply, hey, show up and you'll get a paycheck. They really do need to feel that they're part of something bigger, that they're part of a community, that what you're doing is important. And actually, that's what I love about the energy industry, because it is so important. You know, energy drives social progress. You know, in companies like ours, if we do something, we can actually, we can set the lead. We can set the tone. We can move the dial. That's a really awesome opportunity for anybody starting out in this industry. But it also means we got to live our purpose as a company, you know, that we truly need to power progress. That we've got to get to net zero, we've got to deliver shareholder value, but we've also got to be a good member of the community. We've got to encourage diversity and inclusion. We've got to respect the nature around us. We've got to do all those things, because the younger generation, they're not just asking it of us, they're actually demanding it. And I actually think that's really healthy. I think it's really, really healthy.
I'm actually in full agreement with you. When I think about purpose, when I think about meaning, I mean, this is what candidates come and talk to me about all the time. They say, I don't just want a paycheck. I want to go somewhere where I really, truly fit in. And that meaning and purpose really goes part and parcel with inclusion. You know, when you feel like you fit and you've got meaning and purpose,
yeah,
you're on fire, right? It's a job that you can say, it's not a job. It's something I want to get up to every day. Because we spend, 12 or more hours a day in some sort of capacity, you know, working. And so I want to touch on this a bit, because I know the other thing I saw not too long ago, which was great, is I started seeing Shell all over the community. I mean, the Shell has been in the community here in Houston, and obviously Shell has been in the community worldwide. But I'm curious to kind of understand more about how you're taking a different approach in the community, you know, given that there's this high demand, you know, for energy transition and talent. With that meaning and purpose in mind, what is Shell doing, you know, maybe differently to connect to that workforce?
Yeah. So, you know, a number of things, Katie. Let me start with the community first, because I'm actually super excited. You mentioned the tree on LinkedIn, actually 100% powered by renewable energy.
Which is amazing.
Yeah, I know. And to be able to do that within your own community is fab.
Yeah.
But actually, we recently announced we have built on a partnership that we've had with the Houston Dynamo and the Houston Dash. So our local Major League Soccer team. And we've taken over the naming rights on the stadium. So it's now become Shell Energy Stadium, which I'm super excited about. But I'm more excited about the fact that in partnership with them, we're working towards their net zero emissions ambitions. And so, you know, provision of renewable energy into the stadium, thinking about the circular economy and, you know, how you can reduce waste and really partnering with them on their journey to a cleaner energy environment. And I think that's what this is all about, really. This is about starting with how are we going to deliver a society and an environment which is at least as good as, if not better than, the one that we inherited. You know, what are we passing on? And really that means that we've got to work with our customers, with policymakers, with influencers in the community, with the regulators, on this massive collective effort to say, lads, we've got to deliver more, but we've also got to deliver cleaner energy. And it starts at home. It starts with your fence line community, which is why I'm so excited about Shell Energy Stadium, I'll be honest, because I can look out the window here downtown and I can see that stadium and I can say, this is energy transition in action in my community. And so we can all start. We can all do something. This isn't just about the elite going out and being able to, you know, buy a Tesla and stick solar panels on the roof, we all have a role to play. And that's the energy users, the producers, as I said, the policymakers, the regulators, you know, the local community, we all have a role to play. It really gives me heart that, you know, this journey, yeah, it starts at home. It starts in your local community.
Well, the only reason I think I knew anything about the Christmas tree, so thank you, LinkedIn, for, you know, and you for, you know, posting about the Christmas tree. And then the interesting thing is that led me to Shell Energy. Well, wait a minute. When I was at Shell, it was Shell Oil, and then it became Shell, right? And then there's Shell Trading and there's Shell, you know, downstream and upstream. And yeah. So I said, Shell Energy, what's Shell Energy? I Googled Shell Energy. And it just so happens my current power agreement is up for renewal. And I'm like, Shell Energy, Shell is in the power business. Shell is selling retail power. And so now I get to, you know, juice my house with Shell power, juice my Tesla with Shell power, go to Shell the gas for my husband's car. My point is I get it. Like, it is so much about being where the customers and being where those communities are and reaching out and touching them and knowing too that they can play a huge role in this transition, not just as a participant or as a consumer, but that they can come and join us and be a part of what we're doing and you know, get a job in the energy transition. So gosh, I mean, Carolyn, I talk to you forever. As we wrap up, what is one thing that you wish more leaders were a part of?
Oh, that's a great question. I think for me, I'm in an industry that's about to undergo seismic change. Actually, I would argue it's already started. And to get to a net zero world, I think is probably the defining challenge of our time. It's weird for the energy industry because the energy industry for so long, for the last 100 years, it's been quite a deterministic industry. You know, I find oil, I produce it, the demand is there. Now we're seeing kind of, you know, fragmentation of energy solutions. We're seeing changes in how people consume and supply energy. It's kind of a leap into the unknown for us. We need to put on a hat, which actually is a learner mindset hat. As engineers, we've been knowers and we've been really good at that. But as we embark on kind of the unknown, and such a monumental challenge, I think we have to be learners. I think we have to be curious. I think we have to be humble. I think we need to ask questions. I think we need to assume we don't know, because truly that's where you start to see real innovation, technologies that you haven't even dreamt about coming to the fore to really help us drive this progress that we need. And that progress is really more, and it's cleaner, energy for everybody. So I think that learner mindset, I think we have to be really, really conscious to be open to the new and not assume that we know.
Excellent. Carolyn, it has been so amazing to have this conversation with you. And we are so grateful for the time and the wisdom you've imparted us today on the Voices of Energy podcast.
Katie, you forgot one thing. I'm also a huge fan of Katie Minert. Let me put it out there.
Thank you.
I am a huge fan. And it was such an enjoyable conversation today. So I'm eternally grateful. And I know it'll be the first of many.
Excellent. I'm Katie Maynard, and I am the Voices of Energy podcast host. And that is our time for today.